Thomas charging through the midfield. Thomas, it's up for grabs now. Thomas.
Now Bold. And it's Tony Adams put through by Steve Bold. Would you believe it?
Still Nasri.
Looks like Shabby.
Fusillade, episode one. Are you ready for it? I'm Thomas Wachtel.
And I'm Paul DeBruyler.
I'm Aiden Gibson.
And I'm Ted Harwood.
And we, together, are the Short Fuse, and this is our podcast. Let's get right into it. The first thing that we should probably talk about, although I don't think any of us particularly want to relive it, is the Fulham match from last week. It was painful, basically from beginning to end. We have all, I think, put our thoughts on the blog about it, except I'm pretty sure I never actually wrote anything because I went into a shell after that game. I think I took a nap for an hour, and then I don't remember the rest of that day. So why don't we get a few thoughts out there? Who wants to take the first shot?
I'll take a shot. I think the second half was the worst second half, the worst half of football I've seen Arsenal play in a couple of years. It was horrifying. And I don't know that it can all be traced just to exhaustion and just to too many fixtures, but something wasn't right, and it was really ugly to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Ted, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think that second half, if you throw out the match against Manchester United when we lost 8-2, which I think for all intents and purposes just doesn't count in my mind for a lot of reasons, mainly so I don't feel the pain. But, yeah, that was the worst. There's just nothing. There was nothing.
Well, see, that's the thing. The 8-2 wasn't even painful because it was just funny. It got to a point where you just laughed at it because what else can you do? Whereas this was just ugly and it was just not a pleasant thing to experience.
It was particularly unpleasant for me because I my dad used to be a soccer fan, but nobody else in my family really cares. So I happened to be watching in my living room with my family all around me. And after the match, my mother like turned to me and asked for my analysis of it. And basically my analysis was, I want to go jump off a bridge. And then she wanted more than that. And I was like, well, we were terrible.
At what point did you just vomit?
I almost did, actually. I don't even remember what I said, but it eventually turned into just rage building. I think at one point I said, Giroud should have been out of the game 10 minutes before he got the second red card or the second yellow card. And when he was subbed out, he should have been, Scolacci never should have been in the game. I believe I at one point yelled, our worst player on the entire roster came in the game when we needed defense and then gave away the winning goal. I don't know. It was just awful. It was just awful.
I've tried to look at this season since the Blackburn game as, you know, we're getting better in terms of performances, and that culminated a couple of weeks ago when we beat Wigan 4-0 pretty easily. It looked a bit like the old Arsenal were back, and then we lost the fullback, so things changed. But we were still getting results, which was okay, I guess, but I don't know, we just lost it in the second half, and we didn't even offer anything going forward. I don't think we had a shot on target in the second half, and that, for me, was the most disconcerting aspect of it, that, you know, we're a team that's supposed to be very attacking, very, you know, goes forward a lot, and to not have a shot on target in the second half, that just seems wrong.
I will give some credit to Fulham. I think that while we were terrible, they forced that somewhat. They did a great job of pressing us in the midfield, and we just could not do anything. We couldn't get out of the midfield. I mean, We had players who never play badly, like Mikel Arteta was just nowhere.
Yeah, we had three shots, one of which went about 3 miles wide to the left, another one that was blocked, and another one that went wide right, and that was it. And they were all from about 18 yards away. We actually had a lot of successful passes, which was surprising to me, but really there were about four successful passes near or in the penalty area that entire second half.
Right.
All of our successful passes otherwise were in the middle of the pitch, just going side to side, and that was all we did for the entire second half, basically.
I just felt like we were distressed and on the back foot for 45 minutes and could not figure out a way to get out of it. Like,
and for no real reason that I could see. I mean, Fulham was pressing, but they weren't world beaters. You know, it's just like it was almost like they tried to beat themselves.
We've dealt with pressing better than that while facing better teams than that. I mean, I think we can all agree that Borussia Dortmund is better than Fulham, and they pressed us, and we drew them at Dortmund, and we beat them at home. But I don't know what it is. Fulham just knows how to beat us, I guess. There's something they know.
I think there is an aspect of tiredness too. When you think about how Mikel Arteta had a poor game, he's played every single Premier League game and every single Champions League game bar the Olympiacos one away since he's arrived. And you know, he's 29, he has a history of injuries recently. It seemed like he just didn't have anything left in the tank.
Well, and I noticed that too. Every time the cameras would show Robin Van Persie, I looked at him like, "Wow, you look exhausted, dude. You look like you're just gassed right now." And it was only, you know, the 10th minute of the game. He looked like he wanted to just drop dead.
I really feel like what we needed was a week off, and we got that this week. And considering the fact that our match on Monday is against Leeds United and it's a cup match, I would like to think that a lot of these players are going to get even more rest. There's no way Van Persie plays against Leeds. I mean,
I didn't think there was any way he'd play against Fulham, so I would not be at all surprised if I saw him on Monday.
If he plays on Monday, something is wrong, because we've got, I think Shemak is still around. We have Park, theoretically, and I believe we have a new striker who just came on, who we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Nice segue.
Yeah. I actually think that's definitely enough of Fulham for me. So, yeah.
I do think we should give a little bit of credit to Fulham, though, just so. Definitely. I mean, they took their chances pretty well, and Brian Ruiz in particular really did give us trouble for big stretches of that match.
Honestly, the second half, I was not surprised by the outcome. The only surprise was that it took so long for them to score.
Yeah.
Ruiz was very impressive, and I think a lot of people were criticizing him when he first came to England because he wasn't strong enough or something. But, I mean, he seemed to hold off our midfield fairly well as he drifted inside. I mean, I thought he had a very good game.
Yeah.
All right. That's enough of Fulham. We didn't do this in our pilot episode because nobody knew that we were doing a podcast yet. But one of the features I would like to make a regular thing is questions from the commentariat. And we have a couple of them. We do love our readers because they are awesome, and they're the reason why I personally keep writing things. There was one thing that we actually had talked about discussing beforehand, and one of our reader questions was about that subject, so that's the one we're going to focus on for a while now, I think. It came from Sabrina. Thank you, Sabrina. She asked, what role do you think Thierry Henry will play at Arsenal? Will he be more of a bench player, or do you think he'll start? And if he does start, will we change our formation? Who sits out? Basically, all in all, we're going to get to what I would really like to discuss, which is the king is back. What are we going to do with him? Ted, why don't you give some thoughts first?
I don't think we're going to change our formation too much on paper for him. I think I would imagine that he would... The way I kind of see him is as a replacement for Gervinho at times, playing from on the left. I don't know why, but I feel like coming in from the left, since he was so good at doing that sort of on his own for most of his Arsenal career anyway, he would drift out to the left and cut in. I see him doing that more than playing behind Van Persie or whoever the striker is, whether it's the theoretical Park Chu-young or Shamak, who of course will be in Africa anyway. But I given Wenger's reluctance to put anybody behind the striker besides Aaron Ramsey for some reason, I think he'll come in from the left more. But I could be wrong. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts about that.
I wouldn't be at all surprised, honestly, to see him start on Monday. just because he's new, he's fresh, I would be very surprised to see him play an entire game. I don't watch him in MLS as much as I watch the Timbers, obviously, or some other teams, but he's got no pace left. So I don't see him playing an entire game, but he could be an effective, off-the-bench guy or starting for the first 15, 20 minutes or maybe first half or whatever.
I just don't see him starting because he's 34 years old and hasn't played in a match since, like, October.
Right,
I
mean, exactly.
It's going to take him a little bit of time to get back into things, I think.
Yeah, but he has been training with them for the last month or so.
Yeah, I would hope he'd be relatively close to match fit, and obviously there have been rave reviews for months about his form and training. I mean, I know Van Persie said this week that he doesn't want to get expectations too high, but that Henry has been really, really good in training. And I know that there are a lot of people, I mean, we've been hearing about how Lukas Fabianski is world-class in training for years, and that hasn't really transferred into games, except for a little bit last year. So I don't know if Henry's practice form is going to help that much, but...
Except that we do know that his world-class form can translate into games.
Yes, I mean,
right.
Plenty of
he had world-class form where Fabianski didn't.
Yeah.
I would say that I agree with Ted. I think Henry will play on the left, and I think that I don't think he'll play 90 minutes against Leeds. Arsene Wenger seemed to suggest yesterday in his press conference that he's not completely ready to play a full 90 minutes, that he'll be involved at some point. Whether that means he starts and plays 60 or comes on for 30 minutes, I'm not sure. But I think he will replace Gervinho, because really we don't have a lot of options out there. We know Henry can play on the left. He's done it. I mean, he hasn't done it starting from the left, but he's so used to drifting out to that side from his earlier Arsenal days. I don't think he'll have a problem there. And, there's not a lot of other options that we have on the left. The manager seems reluctant to play Yossi Benayoun and Thomas Rosicki in wide areas. And there's, aside from Andre Arshavin, there's really no other option unless we move Theo Walcott left and play Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
And honestly, between Henry and Arshavin, I mean, Henry doesn't have any pace, neither does Arshavin. They're both basically skill players at this point, and I don't think there's anybody who's going to argue until we see otherwise that Arshavin has more skill than Thierry Henry, especially not at this point. I mean, granted, all we have to work with in recent times is MLS games, but I think our stance right now is that the MLS is not total crap. I mean, that's what I'm going with.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, it's a much different league than the Premiership, obviously. It's a lot more physical. It doesn't rely as much on speed. So I think that's why Henry is working so well there, because he doesn't have to go at full pace for 90 minutes in MLS. He never needs to. The game in Portland last year, he spent most of it sort of hovering just outside the center circle and then occasionally making a run, pretty much not every time, even like every other time the Red Bulls got into the penalty area, Henry would come up and make one of his runs. But you could tell he was conserving as much energy as he could. And so in England, obviously, you can't do that. So that's why I don't think he'll ever play a full 90-minute game. But he can be an effective player in that role, I think.
The one problem I see is that I feel like we've talked a lot about him playing on the left side as a winger. And if he doesn't have pace, I feel like he would be a lot more effective in that role if he had overlapping runs coming from his fullback, which we aren't going to have because who the hell knows who our fullback is going to be against Leeds? Is it going to be Nico Yanaris? I mean, if Kieran Gibbs was fit, if Andre Santos was fit especially, I think Henry, without pace, on the left wing would be very effective working with that fullback. But without that, it's going to be a whole different story. I don't think he's going to be ineffective. I just think it's going to be it's going to be different than it might be with that fullback.
I think you're right, although it's interesting because our normal left-sided player, who's Gervinho, while he has a lot of pace, he doesn't rely on it the way that Theo Walcott relies on his pace down the right. Gervinho's always sort of dribbling directly and somewhat slowly at the opposition defense. So Henry, we know, has a ton of technical skill still, even if he's not as fast as he was. So if he's cutting in from the left, I could see him doing similar things to what Gervinho does, and not needing to rely on his pace that much. But also, when we put Arshavin on the left, when we have to do that, he doesn't really have any pace either. Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to be as big a problem, the lack of pace, as we might think. It'll be interesting to see, though. And I could, I mean, although I think he will start from the left, I think I'd prefer to sort of see him behind the striker. I just don't know that Wenger will put him there.
I agree. Actually, Sabrina in her question mentioned that Henri had said something about how he might play behind the striker in sort of a Gibbs-Bercamp position. I should have said Bercamp first. I'm sorry. I did not hear that, but I think that that is a place where he could be really effective. And honestly, it's a place we haven't gotten much production lately, because although I love him to death, Ramsey has not been playing that well in the very recent past. So I don't know. I think honestly, there are several places Thierry Henry can play, and I think he'd be relatively effective in any of them. What are you guys expecting from him? Like, maybe goals, assists wise.
At this point, I see him more assists than goals. I mean, he'll score a few goals, obviously, but I think his primary role is just going to be to set things up. It seems like, I could be wrong on that, but it's just he just doesn't seem like he needs to be that all-encompassing goal-scoring machine like he was the last time he was at Arsenal, because he's grown and matured, and by all accounts, he's kind of dialed his ego back a little bit, so he's more willing to work within an existing team framework than maybe he was when he left. So to me, that just says he's going to help as much as he can. And if that just means providing the ball, that's probably what he'll do. So
I agree with Paul. I think he's going to be more of a playmaking type of player than he was last time at Arsenal, though. I mean, if you look back at all of these, videos and et cetera, he does have quite a few assists and he does set quite a few things up. I think that's an aspect of his game that was kind of overlooked when he was at Arsenal last time.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Our current reigning goal scorer is sort of the same way.
Right.
Oh, you mean the one-man team?
Yeah.
That guy?
Yeah, that guy. It would be interesting to see what would happen if Henry played in the middle. I don't think he, as in replacing Robin van Persie, I don't think he will, unless he does it in an FA Cup game, because I just don't see Robin van Persie not playing against Swansea and not playing against Man United, unless, touch wood, something horrible happens. So I think that Henry will be more of a playmaker. I think that that's the type of game that he's more suited to doing now, because of, I mean, he doesn't have the pace to burn all of these players, and get past them. And also, defenses are different now in England than they were, 7 years ago. They're not as tactically inept, it seems. There's a lot more defensive play when teams come up against Arsenal. So,
yeah, I will say that a lot of Henry's goal videos that I've seen, it looks like his goals are large part him being awesome, and also a fair amount of the opposing defenses sort of watching him go by them with astonished looks on their faces.
Yeah, I think the quality of the Premier League has just taken a step up, possibly even since he departed. I mean, but definitely since the early 2000s, the defenders are much quicker, at least now, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And I agree about the playmaking thing, too. I mean, if we think about, if you just look at the goal that he scored for New York against us in the Emirates Cup, I mean, he had a key pass in that goal that was pretty amazing. I mean, if nothing else, we know that he still has the ability to make those kinds of passes just because his technique is so good.
And I think he's going to be playing a little bit different game with us than he has for Red Bulls, because he's sort of the focal point of their offense, whereas here it's Robin van Persie. He's sort of a, I don't want to say extraneous part, but he's sort of one of the parts to the offense rather than being the main weapon.
Yeah, so he's one of several. So
yeah, so I think you're right. I think he's going to look a lot more to create goals than score them, but I just don't see Thierry Henry playing for Arsenal for 2 months and not scoring. He's going to score at some
point. Oh, of course he is. Of course he is. Well, one of the other things that I've noticed that I notice about him playing in New York is that he spends a lot of time on the pitch almost being a player coach. You know, every time there's a stoppage of play, every time there's a missed goal, shot on goal, he'll kind of pull the player back and you can see him kind of pointing and gesturing like, you should have gone there, you should do this, you should do this. And he's not doing that sort of in that sort of arrogant, rude way that I am better than you. And you know, it's more of an educational effort. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of ties into his whole going to be a playmaker thing at Arsenal as well, because he can see a lot more of the game now because he's spending a lot of time mentoring younger players. So.
And I'm really hoping that we're going to see a lot of that from him here even, because we have definitely we have players who could use that coaching, who could use that help from a famous goal scorer.
Right.
Theo Walcott could maybe use a little help with the old finishing ability. And I think having Henry around will help those guys. I don't know. He's going to score. There's no way he's not going to score. I don't think he's going to score like five goals or anything like that, but two or three, I could see
that. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say he'd never score. I just don't know that it will be his primary focus, but
yeah.
He's Thierry Henry. He's going to score. That's a fact.
We all want him to score against Manchester United and Tottenham, right? That just has to happen, right?
Pretty much. I don't even care about Manchester United. I would just love to see him score a hat-trick against Tottenham.
Yeah. I think a hat-trick might be a little much to ask.
But it would be so awesome. It would be so awesome if he did.
For him to score against United at the Emirates would be a dream come true for me. And as I said in a comment on the blog, if he scores against Spurs, I might cry. Like literal tears.
I will wake up my neighbors if that happens.
Yeah.
Just as long as none of us do what Twin City Hawkeye said he'd do.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, the phrase butthole naked was a new one on me.
I enjoyed it. I thought that was a great term, and I'm going to be using that in the future. I hope nobody else gets it. I probably won't use it on the blog. I'll use it in my day-to-day life.
Awesome. At work a lot. They love that.
Oh yeah, that'll actually go over well. I don't know. My work's pretty laid back, so it might actually be something.
But is it butthole like naked laid back?
No, that's it is not. No, it is not. They generally want us to wear pants at least. So, anything else you want to say about Henry? Anybody want to complain about how he's wearing number 12 instead of number 14? Because I honestly don't. Give a flip.
I don't really either.
It's not like he's never worn 12 before. That's what he wore for France, and it's what he actually, I read this, it's actually what he wanted to wear at Arsenal, but 14 was taken when we first signed him, or 12 was taken when we first signed him, so he had to wear 14.
See, now I have to go find who was wearing number 12 at the time.
Yeah. Quiz question at the end of the podcast, right?
Yeah.
As soon as I find the answer, it's going to be a quiz question.
That's not a bad idea. Who was wearing number 12 when Thierry Henry first came to Arsenal? Who kept him from wearing his favorite number? Actually, another question. How many more goals would he have scored if he had been able to wear number 12? He'd been truly happy.
15, 20, 25?
What, 1,000?
Yeah. Oh, that's what it was. There was one interesting thing about that goal, not to be a bit of a doomer here, but that goal that New York scored against us, Henry's pass was for, I think, Roy Miller, who was the Red Bulls' left back, and obviously that's a position that we're lacking at right now. So that was just interesting in terms of the context of having fullback support Henry.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but honestly, we don't do a whole lot. When our fullbacks support, it's not quite like that. I mean,
right.
We're not really looking for them to cut into the box and score. I mean, I know Sanya scored a goal last year and Gibbs scored one this year, and obviously Santos scored against Chelsea, but that's a pretty rare thing for Arsenal, even considering how how much we ask our fullbacks to help in the attack. It's almost never scoring. It's usually assists. So maybe it'll go the other way. Maybe Ignacy Mikel will be passing to Henri for a goal.
Also, I don't. Who was in our defense when we played Red Bulls in the Emirates Cup?
Wasn't it Bartley and Squillaci or somebody like that?
God.
I'm pretty sure Kyle Bartley played because I seem to remember he had an own goal in that game.
Yeah. Was a Bowie there? I feel like a Bowie was there.
Too soon.
It was a Bowie and Bartley were back there for Malin and Gibbs.
So it was like half good, half not good.
Basically.
Bartley's not bad, but he did not have a good game. Or actually, I'll amend that. I seem to remember thinking he had played well, except that that own goal was definitely not an act. It wasn't like he had bad luck. He was in a bad place. He allowed it, and yeah. Why don't we talk about our upcoming matches now? We've got a couple probably before the next time we'll record a podcast. But obviously the first one is our FA Cup showdown against Leeds United.
Hooray.
Friends of the blog, Leeds United. Let's start out. Paul, do you have anything you want to say about Leeds that will offend anyone? Because really just attention.
Where do I start? My feelings about Leeds are well known. I was telling my wife last night that even, to this day, there are very few sporting teams that I actively hate, and Leeds is one of them. And I think they're dirty. I think they're ugly. Their style of play is ugly. And honestly, I haven't watched them in the last year or two, so I don't know if they've changed that much, but I suspect not. So
I honestly don't know either, because I know they've had that reputation for a long time, but I don't know if they still play like that. I mean,
I just have a feeling that in order to get back up into the top echelon, they probably would, even if they don't now. Because you see that with a lot of the quote-unquote lesser teams, in the bottom four or five of the Premiership. They tend to play a more physical, more plodding style, and I just don't see Leeds ever really getting away from that. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm skeptical that I'm wrong about that.
In case anyone's wondering, Leeds are eighth in the championship right now, if I'm counting right. Yes, they're in eighth position on 38 points. And their last three games, they lost 1-0 to Derby on the 26th on Christmas Eve. They lost 4-1 at Barnsley, but on the 2nd, they beat Burnley 2-1. So there's that.
If anything, they're... their defense has been their problem this year. I mean, they've actually scored the fourth most goals in the championship, but they've also allowed just like a really high number of goals. They've allowed 10 more goals than any of the teams in the top six other than Southampton. So it appears that, they have no problem scoring, but, if you lose 4-1 to Barnsley, that tells you something, I think.
Yeah.
And refresh my memory, it's the top six in the championship that are in, like, the top two are automatically promoted, and then the next four are in a playoff, correct?
I believe so, yes.
That's right,
So, yeah, they're two spots out of that. It's, I'll just read down the table. Southampton leads. West Ham is tied with them on the lead, but they're behind on goal differential. Then Cardiff, Middlesbrough, Reading, Hull, and my favorite, Blackpool, and then Leeds.
Yeah, I mean, they do seem to have a number of people who are scoring a lot, too, this year. I mean, Ross McCormick, who's this Scottish striker who came over from Cardiff, actually, 2 years ago. He already has, like, 13 goals this year, I think.
I actually have their ESPN SoccerNet page open right now. McCormick leads their team with 11 goals, although I think in the league. He may have scored some in the cup. Do they come in at the third round in the FA Cup, or do they come in the second?
They come in the third round.
Okay, well, he may have scored in the League Cup then. Actually, the one that I just picked out, Robert Snodgrass, 8 goals, 9 assists.
Yeah, he's been their kind of their best player for the past couple of years. He just scored a penalty against us last year.
Yeah. Is he the one who took that penalty?
Yeah,
I think so.
I seem to remember Leeds having the same kind of thing last year, you know, scoring a lot of goals but also conceding a lot of goals. I seem to remember that.
That sounds familiar.
I think they finished just out of the playoff places, right?
I'm pretty sure they did, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
I seem to remember I was sort of rooting for them to get promoted because to beat them in the league rather than in a cup. Because
then they could get destroyed again.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, we've had our fun, but I mean, they're a team that is not going to roll over and die for us, even in London. We saw last year that they can play with us theoretically. I mean, that was the one where we had to put on Walcott and Fabregas at the end, and we drew the penalty, right?
Yeah. Well,
and as we've all seen, Arsenal tend to have a tendency to play down to the level of their opponents a lot. I mean, a lot of these games in the last 2 weeks are games that they should have won easily, but they don't. And so you can't really take anything for granted.
I'm personally hopeful that we are going to be able to combat that by playing some players who haven't really gotten a chance yet. I don't know who is going to play, but I'd really like to see Park play. I'd like to see Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain play. And I've got to think that if Thierry Henry's out on the pitch, that people are not going to roll over. I mean, they'll play well with him, I think. Not necessarily because of him, but I mean, I would hope that these players, for the most part, have been around this club long enough to know that if you let Thierry Henry down, then your ass is grass. I talked to Aiden about this earlier. I had an idea this afternoon. I think for our podcast predictions, what I am going to do, you guys can say what you think is going to happen, but what I am going to do is I am going to pick what I think our starting lineup is going to be and then play that lineup against the opposition in FIFA 12. And whatever happens in that game is going to be my prediction for what's going to happen. So I did that this afternoon with both of the games we're going to talk about. The Leeds Cup match finished 2-0 to Arsenal. We won. Park had both of the goals. I started him.
Oh, that's obviously rigged, because how could Park score?
Yeah, I don't
Park show up?
Yeah. He actually exists, and his name is on the back
he
of
does?
His everything, in the game at least. And I started
just pixels. You know, he might not be a person.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll have to see about that. I also actually started Squillaci and Fabianski in goal and kept a clean sheet, so I guess that says something about my ability to play defense on FIFA 12.
Are you sure when you were playing that Park wasn't actually just a question mark running around the field?
Yeah. No.
It's like the blank avatar, like the little silhouette of a head.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a me that I had created on my Wii.
Giant
yeah.
head.
I started Yanaris at left back, Mikel at the right, and I had Koscielny play. I had Coughlin, Rosicki, Ben Ayoun, Arshavin, Park, and Oxlade-Chamberlain. Henry, I put on 63rd minute. He didn't really do anything. But, yeah, we won 2-0, so that's what I'm going with. Ted, what do you think is going to happen?
I actually think that we'll probably concede at some point. I don't know why I think that, but I think that we'll prevail in the end. I think it'll be probably 2-1 or 3-1, probably. I think we'll win comfortably in the end. I don't know. I just feel like after the performance last week, I think that the players will be kind of hungry to prove that they can actually do something again. So whoever's out there. But I just have a weird feeling that we'll at least concede one goal.
Yeah, that makes sense. I usually have that feeling going into games. So, Paul, what about you?
I just, for some reason, can't get 3-2 out of my head. I think Arsenal will win, but I think it'll be one of those things where they score early and then just hold on for dear life, and the last 5 minutes are going to be terrifying because Leeds will have the lion's share of the possession and only be down a goal. But I think it'll end about 3-2.
All right. Aiden?
I'm hoping it's going to be 3-1. I think we are going to concede, I think, especially since I think Scalacci will have to play. I'm going to predict Oxlade-Chamberlain scores, and then there'll be further calls for him to play next week against Swansea.
And the cult will grow.
Exactly. The cult of Ox.
All right. I think those are all pretty good predictions. I was honestly sort of surprised that I didn't concede against them in my FIFA game, mostly because I am really not that good at defense in FIFA, and I had Scalacci playing, and I had two midfielders. Actually, no, I had a midfielder and a center back playing my fullback positions, so it actually worked out all right, so hopefully it will tomorrow. Who do you think will start at fullback? Giroud is suspended since he was sent off. Correct.
Right.
So who's gonna play on the right?
Well, I think Inaris will.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd agree with that, especially
since
since he's been getting a lot of coverage on Arsenal.com recently. They send it. That seems to say, you know, who's gonna start if we have a cup game coming up. They seem to highlight, you know, one young player, and they did, and they highlighted Inaris. So I think he'll play.
I'd kind of like to see that. He played earlier this year against someone. It was in a cup game. He played pretty well, didn't he? I didn't actually get to see that game.
I think he did all right.
Actually, nobody got to see that game, did they? Because it wasn't on TV and nobody had a stream.
Right. He played all right. I just remember from the highlights, I don't think he made any mistakes. The goal that came as a result of Frimpong and Coquelin losing the ball in the midfield, so...
Yeah. And then I figured Mikel will probably start on the other side.
He's got
to. I think so. Yeah.
Because honestly, I don't really know who else will. Coquelin's gonna have to play in the midfield. Since Frimpong's gone, and if we play Song in this game, then that's insanity. Like, we cannot waste him in this game.
Although anybody we play will have a week to recover before Swansea, or 6 days anyway, so...
Yeah, that's a good point. I would kind of like to get some of our more important players a really extended rest, especially, like, Arteta and Van Persie. Like, they should get the full, like, 2 weeks, I think.
I think they will. I think Song will start, only because our other sort of natural Song replacement is now on loan, Emmanuel Frimpong, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know who else besides Coquelin can play in that sort of double pivot at the moment. So I think Song will play.
Maybe come on as a substitute with Coquelin starting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a lot of options to replace Van Persie and Walcott, you know.
Yeah.
Not as many in that double pivot back there. So.
Yeah. Now I'd imagine probably all of Arshavin and Ben Ayoun and Rosicky will play.
Yeah, probably. I think so.
I said that with as resigned a tone as I can, but...
It's a thing, you know, it is what it is.
It's going to happen. I'm not really that upset about it, especially against a lower level competition. I think at least two out of those three will play well, and I know everybody else is going to guess the same two of those three who will play well, so we don't even need to go through that. All right, Leeds, we should beat them. The other match, we may actually have another podcast before the Swansea game, but I'd like to talk about that a little bit at least. They played us tough last time. We beat them 1-0, and it was off the weirdest goal I've seen in a while. The Mikel Vorm, how are we pronouncing that first name? What did we settle on?
Michel Vorm, I think it is.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, yeah.
He threw the ball off of his own fullback's foot, and it went right to Arshavin, who scored actually a good goal, but it's Arshavin, so what are we expecting? Let's see. Where are they in the table right now? Well, they're not in the relegation zone, which is what I think a lot of people expected of them. But as we talked about last week, that's mostly because there's some really crap teams in the league right now. They're tied with Aston Villa and Fulham on points right now. So
the thing that concerns me about Swansea, and that concerned me about when we played them, was they pass and keep the ball really well.
Mm-hmm.
Better than, you know, most Premiership teams do, and they actually, you know, use it intelligently. If they don't see a forward option, they tend to keep the ball, you know, kind of a defensive measure, and it's led to them keeping quite a few clean sheets. I believe I'm right in saying that they have one of the better home defensive records in the league. Yeah, just looking at the table, I read that
Michel Vorm has the same number of clean sheets as Manchester United this year.
Yeah, they've only conceded four goals at home in 10 games.
That's pretty darn good.
That is impressive.
That's the same as Manchester City.
Yeah. 4-5-1 record at home. That's wins, draws, losses.
And, I mean, aside from Vorm rolling the ball off of his own player for Arshavin to score, I mean, Vorm is a really good keeper.
Yes, he is. Yeah. And considering the fact that goalkeepers often play well against us, that's sort of scary.
That is scary. That's a big red flag.
Yeah. So I guess we can expect an acrobatic, ridiculous performance from him.
I don't know if you guys remember, did they really pack the box when we played against them defensively?
I don't think they did.
I don't think so, yeah. I think they're pretty... They
sort of play like us. Well,
they defend really solidly, but they don't just throw everybody at the box and hope for the best.
They sort of play like us, only a little bit better at defending, apparently.
More consistently.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, away from home, they're not that great. They only have one win. So, they definitely defend differently at home. I think they do drop a bit deeper. And they do use that passing between themselves to hold possession. I guess if you want an example, it'd be like Spain in the World Cup, who really, I mean, they didn't score that many goals. I think they scored, what, 8 in 7 games, but they conceded so few that it didn't matter. So I think that Swansea do a similar thing at home. So I would expect a very tough game on Sunday the 15th.
Yeah, I would presume that we're going to play our first team against them, especially since we will have had such a long time, hopefully, with them resting our best players. So, do you think Henri starts?
No,
I don't think so.
So no. Are we looking at Arshavin again then on the left side?
Yeah,
I think Henri comes off the bench though.
I think so. Yeah.
Unless we sign somebody new. I'm not going to sign anyone new.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that was meant as a joke. Feel free to laugh.
I think any January signings, just like outright signings, don't come until the 31st. That's just my feeling.
Yeah.
You drop like £40 million on the last day and bring in 5 players like we did in August?
No, because I don't think we'll be as desperate like we were. But I think if there'll be like one or two, it'll be that last day.
And I think that the only signing that I can see Wenger making, assuming Henri works out, would be a fullback. And I don't see that happening until the last week because, you know, Kieran Gibbs will be back and then he'll get hurt again. So we'll have that need and it'll be Wayne Bridge and I will hate it every minute of it.
Let's not even talk about Wayne Bridge because the thought of him just makes me unhappy. I just remember destroying him over and over and over again when we played West Ham last year, and I just don't want to see that the other way.
I just feel so bad for Kieran Gibbs. He's like the new Diaby, you know? It's like when he's healthy and in a good run of form, he looks really good and really promising, but he just cannot stay healthy. It's just so frustrating.
The original injury was a stomach muscle problem, right?
Yeah, I think it was a sports hernia.
So that's translated to surgery on his stomach and then on his groin. That I just don't I I Arsenal continue to medically amaze me at times. You know, the amount of injuries that we get and the kind of injuries that we get, just, you know, it never ceases to amaze.
It's actually at the point now where it doesn't amaze me just because I expect it. Like, when Vermaelen got hurt, I was like, yeah, that was going to happen eventually. I mean,
yeah.
I was not surprised. I wasn't surprised when Gibbs had a setback. I won't be surprised if, I don't know, some of our current injured players have setbacks. But I'm sort of interested in that opinion about bringing in a fullback at the end of the transfer window, because allegedly a lot of these guys are supposed to start coming back. I mean, like we said, Gibbs is supposed to come back soon, although he'll probably have something horrible happen. But, I mean, I've seen a lot about how Sanya may be back for the Manchester United game, and apparently Carl Jenkinson suddenly is reappearing.
Wait, he's alive?
Yeah, apparently he's alive and relatively close to coming back, so.
Yeah, he had a stress fracture, so. He and Sanya I'm not worried about actually at all, because Sanya is pretty consistently healthy.
Yeah.
And he had sort of a freak injury. I mean, a broken leg is the kind of thing that's not, you know.
Especially the way it happened. I mean, he sort of got flipped up in the air and just landed wrong.
Yeah. So I'm not too worried about the right side. The left side, Santos isn't back until March. Kieran Gibbs is a question mark. So
he's made of very poorly formed plastic, I believe.
I don't think we can continue playing Thomas Vermaelen at left back. I think that him getting hurt was a factor of playing left back. While he has done it before, you know, it's harder physically than playing centre back, and you know, more. So I think it's somewhat related to that. And I think Vermaelen's too important to, you know, risk having him get hurt playing left back.
I would agree, but on the positive side, apparently Coquelin can play on the left side relatively well, and since he's a midfielder rather than a center back, he's a little bit more used to running back and forth, so he may be able to handle that a little better. But I agree, I would much prefer to bring in a loan a little earlier in the transfer window, have him for, I believe that we've talked about if we're going to loan somebody, keeping him till the end of the season, not having it be a short-term loan like Thierry Henry's is. So I would still, though, like to get that done relatively early. But even if Gibbs does come back, though, he can, whoever we bring in on this potential loan could be our second string left back until Santos comes back. And then I guess Santos can play left wing if he wants.
Yeah.
He'd probably be better at that.
He might be.
Well, we already know he can score, right?
Better finisher than Jorginho is.
Waiting for that one.
And it came from me, shockingly. The biggest Jorginho supporter in the world. I kid because I love.
The thing that concerns me about signing someone is, and that it seems to have gone unnoticed with this whole Henry coming in, is that to play in the Premier League, you know, he has to be registered. And we can only have 17 non-homegrown players, and we have 17 non-homegrown players who are over 21. So I would assume that there's three that are somewhat expendable in Manuel Almunia, Sebastian Scalacci, and possibly Andre Arshavin. So one of them has to be dropped from the list and then maybe sold or maybe loaned out for even Henri to come in, and then more for other players to come in. I just don't see Arsenal signing anyone because of that, because we'd have to move so many players.
Personally, I'm hoping we're going to be able to figure out a way to sell Arshavin and, I guess, just have Scalacci and Almunia taken out behind the shed or something. I don't even care what happens to them. If we don't get money for them, whatever. But just having them not on the roster anymore would do better than they've done recently, at least.
What about Diaby? He's like the forgotten man.
I remember him.
We can drop somebody from I'm going completely from my football manager experience here, so bear with me. We can drop somebody from that list without actually losing their contract, correct? We could take Diaby off of that list, have him no longer be active in the Premier League for us, but that would not void his contract. It's not like optioning a guy in Major League Baseball where you have to go through the waiver wire or anything like that.
Correct.
Okay. And he could theoretically then still play in Champions League matches.
Yeah.
Although the likelihood of that, I couldn't possibly think would be that great.
the likelihood of Diaby playing anything over five a side at this point is a dream for me, just because I've seen him play. When's the last time he played? He played this year, didn't he?
Yes.
Fulham at home. I think he played, 7 minutes and then got hurt?
Yeah.
I didn't dream that. That actually happened?
No, I think he's played a total of something like 15 minutes this season. He came on against Dortmund and he came on against Fulham, and that was it.
Poor bastard.
He is the most unlucky man. Somebody looked it up on some podcast I was listening to. Since he broke his leg against Sunderland when Dan Smith tackled him in 2006, I think he's had something like the number of injuries he's had is well into the double digits at this point since then.
That's brutal.
It's just that he's the unluckiest person. Not only is he unlucky because of injuries, but he's unlucky. I mean, the headed own goal against Manchester United at Old Trafford a couple of years ago, the look on his face after he did that was just like, as if the moon had just landed on him or something. Like, he just cannot do anything right anymore. It's sad to see, because he's such a good player when he's healthy and feeling it. But
I mean, he's someone that brings something to our midfield that we don't have in a lot of players. You know, he can go past people. He's strong. He's physical. He can shoot the ball from range. He can pass the ball as well. He's a very good midfield player. He's a dynamic player that I think we've been missing him and missing Jack Wilshere. But he's never healthy. And when does it come to the point where Arsene Wenger can't rely on him anymore? You know, he always says, "Well, I'm not going to sign till Diaby comes back." Diaby never comes back for more than, three games at most?
At this point, yeah. Yeah.
It's just sad. Really unfortunate.
And I will be sad, too, if Arshavin leaves. Not because he's been spectacular this year, obviously, but just because I just love him.
I might have to do a montage of some kind if he leaves, because I love the guy. He's not good, but I still love him. Has there ever been another player for Arsenal that has had such a disparity between their actual quality and how much people like us like him? I know most people don't like him, but just for some reason, every time I see him do something ridiculous, like wear a Boy Scout uniform, just...
A buoy?
Yeah.
Perry Groves.
Oh, a buoy. I miss him, too. Man. The frog leaps and all that stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. Comedy legend, Emmanuel Abue.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was quite a Swansea preview, which turned into... Or Diaby. I did a FIFA preview of that one too. We win 4-1. Ben Percy has a hat trick. What was that?
One man team.
Yeah. Well, he actually did not score all the goals, obviously, since I said we scored four and he had a hat trick. Theo Walcott scored a goal. I managed to actually do that.
Well done, Theo.
I almost turned the game off because it was so unrealistic. maybe it's time for me to turn up the difficulty level. I started with our full first team for the most part, which at this point has a back line of Coughlin on the left, Koscielny, Mertesacker, and then Giroud on the right. Excuse me. I started Arshavin, but I took him off at the 75th for Henri. He actually had an assist on Van Persie's last goal. And this was actually really weird. There was a ball in the box in the 90th minute that I tried to play out of bounds with Mertesacker and inexplicably got called for a penalty. So Scott Sinclair stepped up in the 90th minute to take a penalty, and I managed to save it with Chesney. So that was pretty exciting. It was the first penalty I'd ever saved in any level of FIFA. So
congratulations.
Thank you. So that's my prediction. 4-1 to Arsenal. Ted, what are you thinking for Swansea?
Not 4-1. I Swansea's so tough at home, I don't think there's any way we could score four. I think 1-0 to Arsenal.
If it helps, I was really surprised I was able to do it. I mean, I'm really not that good at FIFA. I'm not going to claim I'm better than I am. Aiden, what are your thoughts?
As I said, I think it's going to be very tough. I'm going to go with a one-goal victory, either 1-0 or 2-1. I'm not sure which one yet, but it's going to be close. It's going to be worrying in the 90th minute.
Paul?
I just sort of see 1-1 all over this game. You know, like everybody said, it's a tough place to go play. They're a tough team to break down, and Arsenal struggle to break down tough teams. So I don't think they'll lose, but I think it'll be a 1-1.
Right, well, you're all wrong. 4-1.
I'd be happy to be wrong.
Yeah, me too.
God, I would really enjoy that. Especially just, I don't know. I could really go for a 4-1 victory right now for Arsenal.
Yes, that would be nice. We should save that for United or Spurs.
I would go for like 10 4-1 victories in a row, honestly.
That would be nice.
But that's not going to happen. I think that's all we've got to cover for this one.
Well, we have to answer the trivia question.
Yes.
Turns out that the person who was in possession of the number 14 or the number 12 at Arsenal when Thierry Henry showed up was Christopher Wray.
Liberian international superstar.
Yes, indeed.
Do you happen to know how long he was at Arsenal?
He left in 2000.
So that's like Henry came in what, 98?
He came 8. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So
he was there for 2 years.
2 or 3 years.
And according to the all-knowing Wikipedia, he was crowded out by both Thierry Henry and Davor Šuker.
Wow.
Yes. So take that.
So there's that. Yes. Maybe you should have just given up the number 12. Or maybe not, because 14 works. I actually kind of like that Henry wore 14 because he is my favorite Arsenal player of all time. My favorite Met of all time. I assume everybody's picked up by now that I'm a huge Mets fan. They're like my other huge team along with Arsenal. My favorite Met ever is Tom Seaver, who I actually am named after. He wore number 41. So I always kind of liked that Henry wore 14, Seaver wore 41. So they're the opposite of each other. I thought that was kind of cool. Anyway.
Christopher Wray was also born on my birthday, so that's exciting.
Oh, man.
Different year, though.
My favorite Met player ever because it's too soon. Too soon.
Beltran?
No.
Bovon?
Bovon is no one's favorite Met
player. Had to do it.
He's my favorite ever Met player who eats big sandwiches. I'll give him that.
I was going to say, my favorite Met player ever who may have tried to eat a teammate, although Benny Agbayani may have done that also, and I love Benny Agbayani.
Although I will give you my all-time favorite baseball story. I lived in Connecticut 2001 through 2002, and I had a good friend who was a season ticket holder for the Mets, so we'd go to games all the time. He'd give me his extra ticket. And one game, I don't remember who they were playing. I don't remember what was going on. But Mo Vaughn was on the field playing first base or standing on first base and trying not to eat it. And fairly routine pop fly comes over into the foul territory. So he's got a bead on it. He steps back. And all of a sudden, he fell over. He didn't trip over anything. He didn't trip over the base. He didn't trip over a coach. He just flat out fell over. It was one of the funniest things I've ever... It took about a half second for the crowd to figure out what was going on, and then the laughter was just insane.
He probably tripped over all the money he was making to be terrible.
It's too bad there weren't...
It's really taste day, one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a baseball field.
It's too bad that the animated GIF was not more of a thing in 2001, 2002.
Oh, like Pablo Sandoval, he saw a piece of cake.
Exactly.
Ted, were you the one on Twitter who said that the animated GIF file is possibly the greatest invention of the past 10 years?
Yes, I think it might be.
I would agree with that.
I'm with you. I love them. Like, they're so good. If they're done right, they're awesome. That one of John Terry falling over against Chelsea is just perfect.
Yeah, I mean, John Boyce put together the 50 top GIFs of the year on the SB Nation, the main site, and... Every single one of them is unbelievable.
Gold.
Yeah. I need to go read that post right after we finish here because I haven't read it yet. Fuselade, the thing we're best at is going off topic.
Yes. Yeah, and that was a wrap up. That was a conclusion. We even went off topic on the conclusion. How does that work?
You're right. That's a pretty good conclusion, though, talking about Mo Vaughn falling over for no good reason. To actually wrap things up, the first thing I want to do is I want to thank Mid-American for providing us All Is Gone, the great song, for our introduction and our conclusion. So check them out, Twitter, Facebook, Bandcamp, MySpace, they're all over the place. They're so good. Listen to their stuff. Anybody else have anything to add at the end here?
Just Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. So yeah, for the Short Fuse and for Fuselade, I am Thomas Wachtel.
I'm Paul DeBruyler.
I'm Aiden Gibson.
And I'm Ted Harwood.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Up the Arsenal.